Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about the 1975 Dungeon board game by Dave McGarry. You know, it was designed at the same time as D&D alongside Arneson and Gygax. It's a great introduction to early D&D, and it's had like half a dozen revisions over the years. But does it stand up today? All that and more on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's discussion, I'll remind everyone, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our After Party Chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our private Discord server that is available to all our patrons. And you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, pledge at any tier, and you'll get instructions for how to join the Discord server. Get your accounts all set up over there while we're talking, because at the end of the show, maybe about 10 minutes after the end of the show to give ourselves a little break, we'll be there to chat with you all.
We love that. Our patrons are the best. Thanks to Bacrius for checking in that we are currently live on Twitch and YouTube and Restream Bots. Thank you so much. So the dungeon board game, you know, it's funny because it really this board game by Dave McGarry. And I'll say, you know, we're talking about it because I pulled it out this past just a couple days ago with my regular Friday night gaming group. They had never played it before. I used to play it. Here's my very well-loved box that's kind of sort of half still together here from 1975. And I used to play this a lot. I used to play this like lots and lots. And I was actually surprised when I pulled it out how long it's been, how many years it's been since I last played it. And
yeah,
so
I've
our
got my copy out here too, but I've got the later 89 edition. The new dungeon game.
The new dungeon. Fantastic. Much more elaborate. I'm jealous.
Yeah. I assume that yours has like a paper map, right? Like
that is correct.
An interesting box. It's like your standard like D&D size box, right? Which
correct.
Meant to hold an 8.5 by 11. Yeah, correct. That's interesting. Yeah, the new one
you know what?
Tries to be more board game looking, right? With the big trifold cardboard.
Totally. And I gotta say, you know, for being a paper map, it's super robust. It's basically like a vinyl texture. And, you know, here we are 51 years later. It is still in great shape, frankly. And the one thing that slightly surprised me is when I did pull it up Friday night, it was just a tiny little bit stuck to itself that I'd never seen before. But gently just took the one spot apart. But yeah, for a allegedly paper map, it stands up great.
It's got your kind of traditional board gamey kind of
trifold
because it's enormous.
Nice.
I don't know. The old trifold map.
Nice. Super nice. And it's laid out to give you a little bit more space too, I think.
Well, yeah, probably. Yeah. I have a weird history with this team, Dan. Sounds like maybe you do too. So we should chat about it.
Yeah. How did you, so I think I might've acquired this from my cousins possibly, who maybe initially owned it, played it. And obviously I was significantly more intensely into it than anybody else. So I think at some point it got handed off to me. And I have most of the playing cards. I've actually lost all the spell cards. And I think it initially came with, I think 12 counters for characters, and I've only got two left actually. But that's easy. You can easily fill that in with any miniatures you have lying around, so that's not a problem.
That's funny. Did you get? So I feel like I've heard the story of the cousins and their board game collection before. Is this the same cousins who had Dark Tower?
It is. Yes. Good catch. Well, it is.
That's funny.
Which remained with them.
I want to meet Dan's cousins and have them reminisce about young Dan coming over to drool over their older board games.
And their Commodore.
They're Commodore 64. Yeah. Nice, nice.
Can I? Okay, look, I'm gonna interject this. So they had a Commodore 64. I had a Trash 80. So the games weren't compatible. I'd go over there for things like Pirates and Temple of Apshai and things like that. And my grandfather, who was in his own ways an intelligent man, he ran a lumbering business. He could do surveying manually and stuff like that. He came over, saw us at the Commodore computer, right? And his assessment was, nothing will ever come to that. That is foolishness. You should not spend your time on a computer. Nothing will ever come of it. And yeah. I sympathize because, wow, I've called some stuff really wrong too.
That's funny. But I assume you learned about Dungeons and Dragons before you learned about the dungeon board game. Is that true?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I wonder if there are many people for whom it's the reverse. But definitely, I came about it in a very weird way because, Dan, I think you and I have discussed in the past that the way we came to Dungeons and Dragons in general is not similar to others. That we are of an era. Most folks our age who learned of D&D usually learned it through someone older. There was some kind of mentorship, something like that. Neither you nor I came at it that way. We learned it by just being dumped a product in our lap, a book or a box set, and said, good luck. Here you go. Figure it out, kid.
Yes, we both learned from those. For me, my uncle actually gave me a copy of Games magazine in the late 70s that had like our top 100 recommendations. I think they had the Games 100 every year kind of before Christmas. And I saw this one paragraph write-up of Dungeons & Dragons, and I was like, this looks amazing. I must have this. And so I did request it for Christmas, and I had to learn the whole thing because nobody else had ever heard of it.
Nobody ever heard of it. Yep. So part of that, like, of course, I had the BX box set to go on to start with. As I learned more about the game, I discovered I could go down to my local in-town toy store, had some of the books, but an odd smattering. They clearly didn't really, it wasn't like a proprietor at the toy store who understood gaming and could guide me in any way. It was just like, I don't know, here's products on the shelf. Buy whatever you want, kid. So I had no guidance whatsoever. But I remember like reading in the back of books and reading and getting my hands on some Dragon magazines. And this is my exposure to the early stages of the hobby of like, oh, there's this greater world of people who are into this out there somewhere. It's pre-internet. I don't know how to reach them, right? Mm-hmm. How do I learn more? And eventually I discover there is such a thing as a dedicated game store, a store specifically that only sells hobby games. I'm desperate to go to one. I'm growing up on Long Island just outside of New York City. So, of course, the closest one to me is, in fact, in New York City. I convinced my mother to take me there one day. Young, 12 or 13-year-old Paul convinces, probably we're going to the city for some reason. I'm like, we have to stop at the game store because I have to see it. and I have, I have my saved up money in my pocket, and I'm thinking I want to buy something. Definitely going to buy something awesome D&D related. And I have in the back of my head, maybe I'll buy some miniatures because I hear those are a thing and they seem cool. I have none, right? No zero miniatures at this point, and I would like to buy some. And I come across this product. I'm going to put the picture up here. This box set by joint product by TSR and Ralpartha. It caught my eye because it has a nice collection of adventurers. Right, these are the player characters, not monsters. Player
That's
characters.
That's great.
Right, you got your fighter and your cleric and your magic user and all the tropes are right in there. Anyone who recognizes these miniatures will know that, like, Ralpartha produced the crap out of these miniatures and reused them 7 ways till Sunday. Man, these miniatures showed up in a lot of places. I don't know if they were originally created for this box set or not, but you'll notice that this box set is specifically for the new dungeon board game.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'm opening it up, and I'm like, oh, these are awesome miniatures, and I'm trying to figure out how to paint them, and that's a whole other story of, like, again, blind, totally blind, no one helping me out, nonsense of trying to figure out how to go with this. But this box set includes metal miniatures for use with the dungeon board game. So get rid of your little plastic guys that came in the box set. Place them with these nice metal miniatures. There's one for every character type in the board game, plus 4 new ones. And it comes with this little piece of paper, which I still have, that describes the rules for how to use the 4 new character types in the dungeon board game.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at this going, what the hell is the dungeon board game? I have no idea. So eventually I tracked down and bought the new dungeon board game.
Okay. Great.
These miniatures and these rules that I have to check out this game.
I don't think I ever heard that story. That's delightful.
Yeah, there you go. That's kind of a ridiculous story. I got another picture for you. This is actually a view of sitting what's right here on my desk right now. These are the miniatures. I've lost only one of them. Only the Ranger has gone missing. These are probably the first miniatures I ever painted. In fact, I know for a fact that the gnome illusionist there on the far right, he looks all janky because I've started trying to paint him with watercolors. Because what the hell did I know?
Great. Yes, I get it. Great. Brilliant. Wow.
Yeah, still have most of these guys.
That's a lot better than my that's a lot better than my official piece. That's great.
That's what's in your game? That's funny. The new dungeon comes with plastic versions of these same casts.
Oh.
See, they look just like them.
Oh, really?
But pure, whatever. Yeah, so these are my first ever miniatures. I still have them, along with a whole bunch of other, like, you know, janky Ralpartha pewter and leads. I can't believe I'm sad that the Ranger wasn't here. I was picking them out so I could take a picture of them for this show. And the Ranger, I remember the Ranger got broke. I think someone stepped on him. The sword broke off. I don't know if he's, maybe he just got thrown out or something because he got so mangled.
Yeah.
There they are. Yeah.
Well, that's still impressive.
There you go. My original. So you know what I really should do is, since they've kind of fallen out of circulation, these things are so chipped up and beat up from, you know, being the first miniatures I ever painted and being played with for so long. But I don't want to, like, restore them or anything, because that's...
Yeah.
What I really ought to do is put them in some kind of box and shove them in here in my dungeon board game, and I have official painted miniatures with my dungeon.
Yes. Yes. That would be neat. I mean, well, also, we could... We could make rubber molds for them and then cast new ones, and you could paint those.
I could, but also, as I said, Ralpartha way overproduced these, so I'm pretty sure actually I have doubles and triples of some of these kicking around.
Okay, that's funny.
It sounds like a lot of work for something you can probably go buy for a nickel on eBay. Like I said, they were everywhere. Like, I can't tell you how many different board games I got with, like, oh, look, it's the same miniatures in this board game as well. You know, first quest came with them.
That's really funny.
They really, it was that era, right? Right? Like, it was like TSR art in general was going through that, where, like, the same art and again and again using.
And at this era, we're talking like late 80s or like going towards 1990, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would have bought this stuff, right? Like, this game came out, the print I have came out in 89, but I probably bought it.
Yeah.
In like 91 or so.
Yeah. You're right. They were reusing a lot of the arts resources. Yeah.
So that's my early history.
Fast forward. Much later. So I'll just tell the story that we got from Dave McGarry, the creator himself. So Paul and I got to go to GaryCon in 2018. And we're returning again this year. We'll talk more about that later. But here's a shot when we got to see Dave McGarry exhibiting his original map design that he made by hand, I think circa 1972. And the story, as I was pulling it back out of my memory bank for our friends on Friday, is that he was in Dave Arneson's original playgroup. I mean, before, you know, they're doing a role-playing thing using the chainmail war game rules. They hadn't, you know, Gary Gygax didn't know about this yet. They certainly hadn't picked the name Dungeons and Dragons yet, but everybody was really enthusiastic about this new gaming form happening in a dungeon, so much so that Dave Arneson couldn't serve as the only DM in existence, couldn't service as many people being excited about the game. So some of them, particularly Dave McGarry, had the idea of, we need to make some kind of version that we can simulate without needing a DM. So I'm going to make a board game version. And what Dave told us is that there was a particular month where he was going to be drafted in the army. His girlfriend broke up with him. He went into a manic state and he developed the whole game within a single weekend. Is what happened.
Right, I remember.
And, so when I told this to our friends on Friday, one of my much younger friends said, doesn't that sort of feel like just the overall how D&D got made in general story?
I was about to join the army. Like, my girlfriend broke up with me. What else am I going to do?
I feel that. And so supposedly, I think around the next year, like 1973, there was a day where people were getting excited, and they were in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis area. People were getting excited about this game based on the chainmail rules that had Gary Gygax's name on it. So their group went and a particular afternoon exhibited these two games for Gary Gygax. And number one was this role-playing kind of freeform thing that Dave Arneson showed everybody. And the second one was Dave McGarry showing off his dungeon board game. And, everybody in Lake Geneva, Gary was super excited by both. And obviously he, injected himself and elaborated on the game that became D&D. But he also really liked the dungeon game. And so a year after D&D, they published the dungeon game. It's been published in many, many languages over the years. And clearly Gary was playing regularly because there's a number of Dragon articles with Gary's name on it where he's publishing expansions for new character classes. So apparently he kept playing it for some time, and it was also a big hit. Use the same rules, right? So the essence, the core of both of them to begin with is the combat rules from Chainmail and the same stats, the same basic stats to get started with in Chainmail is exactly how you do combat in this dungeon game. So at least at the inception,
fascinating.
They were kind of the same
game.
I did not realize that
the core combat mechanic was ultimately just lifted straight from the game. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take a look. I'm gonna prove it to you, Paul. I want to take a quick look at it. So if you pull up the green image that has a couple of the playing cards, and you put these out on the game map, so every room is going to have two cards. You're going to have a monster card on top, and you're going to have a random prize card on the bottom. And here you can see a couple examples from the third and fourth levels of the dungeon. And on the left, you've got the ogre monster, and you can see that for whatever it's getting attacked by, there's a number that you need to roll on 2d6 to defeat that monster. So I know it's a little small here. So it starts with maybe a lightning bolt spell or fireball spell. If you go into melee with a wizard, wizard needs to roll an 8. Superhero, which is an 8th level fighter, needs to roll a 6. Hero, which is a 4th level fighter, needs to roll a 9. Then you also have a value for elf there. And you can see there's werewolf, there's green slime, there's mummy. So I'm just going to put that in my brain here. So wizard, 8, superhero, 6, hero, 9 is what you got. And then if you flip over to the, I think it's the blue dot picture. I've pulled out the fantasy combat table from Chainmail, from the Chainmail war game. And you have this appendix with fantasy type things. And if you have fantasy super things battling each other, you got to go to this table that shows you the number on 2d6 to beat the thing. And let me see, ogre is like the fourth column from the right, so the defender's on top. So if I go four columns from the right, I see troll ogre, and if I go all the way near the bottom, I see that the wizard needs an 8 to beat the ogre, which I think is the exact same thing. And the hero needs a 9, which is the exact same thing. And I think the superhero needs a 5, which is one off. So they change it from 5 to 6. So So clearly Dave was looking at this table, which is what they were using for early D&D with Dave Arneson. And it's not always, it's much of the time it's the same, and he might adjust it. And he also clearly had to make brand new numbers for the elf combat. He had to make up numbers for the fireball lightning. And when there's a brand new monster, like green slime isn't here and mummies aren't here, then he had to make that stuff up. But at least the inception is the same mechanic as chainmail. It's still there. Yeah.
And I'm noticing I have here I've got my dungeon box set open next to me. I have a couple of random things in here that probably I have not looked at since we went to GaryCon in 2018 and met Dave and played Dungeon with him. I actually have the rule book for the game. I guess I got Dave to sign it, so that's kind of cool.
Yes. Yes. Nice.
But he also gave me this, which is the reason I'm bringing this up.
Yep.
Do you have one of those? Is this?
I do. He gave a custom monster and prize to everybody at the table.
Look at that. I was just looking at your table there and comparing, like, okay, Red Dragon, let's look at it.
Same one.
Hero and superhero. Yeah. Well, you
probably know that.
Hand out his little prizes to everyone who played his game. Wizard and superhero. The wizard is different. The wizard number is a little off, but the hero and superhero both line up perfectly for Dragon right on your Fantasy Combat table.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's a long time. I didn't know that.
Fascinating. I think in your print of the game is, I'm trying to remember what it, in my print of the game, I think what happens is, I don't know if this is the same in yours, but like, it doesn't list them by name. It assigns a color. And so it says like fighters attack on the red number or something like that. And then,
okay. Oh, I see. Okay. I follow in the first edition, the back of the cards are all black and white. And there are only four classes, specifically, and it's probably not what people would guess. It's elf, hero, superhero, wizard. But again, that's stuff that was in chainmail. So if you're looking for a thief or a cleric, they're not in chainmail. They weren't options at the time. So it kind of makes sense they started with those four things. And as, like, one of our players on Friday actually said, this game really stands up more than I'd expect from 1975. This would be a good basis. You could make expansions for this. And so when, Gary and other people were writing expansions for new classes, they had to refer to the combat stats for elf or hero, superhero, wizard as they rolled out other stuff. So it actually makes a lot of sense to not keep referring to different classes to put them in these categories so that colors, you could refer to them like that.
That's what the monster cards look like in my set, right? They're just colors. And so then, you know, if you're a fighter, you attack on the red. It's funny that you're talking about expansions because, of course, remember that the way I learned about this game was through an expansion, right?
Right.
Through the Ralph Hartha miniatures that added four character types. And the fascinating thing, frankly, is... okay, I guess
I want to know what they are.
What four character classes they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, I don't know. So here's, when Gary and other people were writing some expansions, here's how they expanded with suggested classes. And they were getting more complicated all the time as they had to give like exceptional loads. So the very first thing that Gary made suggested in before Dragon Magazine, Tactical Studies Rules Number 6, was dwarves and clerics. And then the next thing, he had an article in Dragon Magazine number 1. If you ever find a Dragon Magazine number 1, there is an article by Gary expanding Dungeon with hobbits and thieves. And then after that, somebody made a monk and bard article. Yep. And then there's kind of an interesting article whereby at Gen Con 11, they had a dungeon tournament where you were only allowed to use the new classes. And then they were surprising the players with a number of new monsters and prizes that they didn't know about. And then there was also an option for paladins, maybe, which is kind of an interesting tournament there. So my first guess would be that they were reusing some of those expansions, but maybe not.
Well, that's now I'm curious, you're in your print of the game, what classes come with it? Because I'm guessing they're actually different from what's in the new dungeon.
They are.
Superhero? Are those separate things in your game? Wow, I don't have that.
Yeah, elf, hero, superhero, wizard. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's no... So the new dungeon, the default classes that come with it are warrior, which is, I don't know, either hero or superhero, because they don't make that... And then what an interesting distinction that there's hero and superhero. I guess they balance that by, like, one is stronger but needs more money?
That's usually the correct. Exactly.
In this game. Yep.
Okay, and we haven't said this, right? Just for the viewers, right? The game's fundamentally a race. So everybody individually goes in the dungeon, has to beat monsters and get treasure. And when you get a certain treasure level, you come back to the start, you win with a threshold. So at least in my original game, the weakest ones, hero or elf, need 10,000 to win. The superhero needs 20,000. The wizard needs 30,000. And that's how they balance them there.
So the new dungeon comes with warrior, elf, dwarf, wizard, paladin, and thief.
Right.
Very odd mix. I'm trying to think of how that even matches to what you said comes in the original game. I guess elf.
Well, the
elf,
war
elf is the same.
Right. Right. So, and I, at least with the expansions I'm looking at, the dwarf mostly uses elf rules. I'm guessing that the warrior in your edition is the same as a hero, probably. Does the warrior need 10,000?
20.
Oh, well, then maybe it's a superhero, I guess.
I think the warrior is a superhero, and I think the dwarf might have replaced the hero, because the dwarf only needs 10,000, but it's definitely attacking on a different number from the elf.
Right. That makes sense. I follow what you're saying there. And then the paladin is like a superhero that also has some healing capacity. And yep. The thief, I think, was like some kind of mixture of hero and elf when I saw it.
Yeah,
they need 20 or something.
In my book here, they need 20,000, and there's all this weird rules about them ambushing other characters to steal their money.
I believe that's
numbers, which is, quote, according to the rule book, a little better than the elf. The elf only attacks on white.
I believe that that's basically the expansion that Gary wrote. That's when I see the thief option from him, that's exactly the rules for thief.
Yeah, he's attacking on the same number as the wizard.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah. Okay, so add to that, four new classes in the expansion, we get to add halfling, cleric, ranger, and gnome illusionist. And
right.
I adore that cleric didn't make the cut until the expansion.
I mean, how many times do I have to say it? Cleric doesn't really fit. We don't need cleric. Push comes to shove, cleric's out.
That
good
is
choice.
Funny. Yeah.
I got to mention, because neither of us have a copy of it. One of my new players Friday was sufficient, and he does play D&D 5th edition. Was sufficiently enthusiastic. He's like, "Can I get this today? Is there a version on the market today?"
Is there a new dungeon?
they just call it dungeon. The most recent, so Wizards did release a version in 2012 and also a version in 2014. That, to my knowledge, that's the last time they released it. So you have a big box. It is back to just called dungeon ! It also has, like, this is a Dungeons and Dragons type product.
Yep.
But it's more or less kind of the same game. The interesting thing is that now that we're in the 5th edition, and this makes sense, right? If you're looking for this to be part of the Dungeons and Dragons family of IP, what they've done is they've gone back to four basic classes, which are the four actual basic classes in normal D&D. Fighter, wizard, rogue, and cleric. No elf, no dwarf, no paladin, none of that stuff. So kind of, you know, revised, and I think it's a little bit more modern game where each of them have some kind of move that nobody else can make and stuff like that. And I believe the 2012 edition kind of had older style artwork, and the 2014 had more cartoony kid type artwork, basically.
The other expansion of note that's here in my box is this lovely expansion that adds six more classes. Written by me in college in the late 90s, I wrote six new character types for this game. I can't tell you why. I don't know what possessed me at that time.
Okay.
And they're very late 90s characters.
I don't have it. It's a great basis for expansions. I don't have this dated, but I actually have this slightly yellowed piece of notebook paper.
Yes.
Okay. In which I have Solitaire, Become the Elven Lord Wizard, in which you can start off at the very lowest level as your basic elf, and as you return more and more treasure, you level up, and at some point you're fighting as a hero, and then you get, you know, normally wizards get seven spells in this game, and then at some point you get one spell. I can take one spell, and then again, two, three, four, and at the end, I fight as a superhero or a wizard, and I have seven spells, and I can go anywhere I want. And I mean, partly it's a very sad story because I was sufficiently isolated. I didn't have anybody to play with, but this allowed me to, I could leave the board set up and I could empty the whole board with one single character. And that's what that accomplished.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Interesting. You know, the Ralpartha expansion, because it includes the Gnome Illusionist, also includes two new spells, specifically for the Gnome Illusionist. Doesn't use the... So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. It's interesting. I would be curious to see the newer, the 2014 print. Be fascinated to see what they have. I don't know. Is it worth trying to dredge up a copy? Are they now collectible and going to pay $1 million to find one? Or
maybe so. That's a good question. I have no idea what the second. That's a good question.
Curious to see it.
So let me talk about how it was received this Friday. So when my players, you know, heard about it a couple weeks ago, they were like, we need to play Dungeon now. And I was like, I didn't really have it. I wasn't really guessing that there would be a lot of appetite for, and I was like, it's a very simple, very stripped down early D&D type game. And they really wanted to see it happen. And it was super well received. People were surprised at how well it held up. It is pretty simple. It goes extremely fast. Now, I know a lot of people will sell a game. It's like it's fast paced. But this is like really fast paced. Like a couple times we went around the whole table of five players in literal seconds. Like it was actually like person one got done and it was like, you're done, you're done, you're done, you're done, back to you, player one. And they were just in the process of starting to pick up their phone and they were like, wait, it's back to me already? They couldn't actually get their index finger on the phone to check what they were trying. Like, it's back to me already? Like, yes, it's your turn.
That's funny.
It goes incredibly fast. It still had some interesting strategy wrinkles about where do you go versus where does somebody else go? Am I depleting somebody else's stuff? Am I going to stock another player in case they drop stuff? The one wizard player, what spell loadout and how can I use them? There's some magic items that show up that all of a sudden change how people are interacting with the game. And it interestingly came down to, you know, when you had some people, we were using all four of the classes. You had some people on the lower levels, the easier levels, like, you know, level 2, 3. And then you had the superhero wizards operating on levels 5, 6. And around the same time, on both of those areas, you had someone get seriously injured, have to drop all their prizes with a monster, return to start. And then there was a mutual run on both ends of the map to go scoop up the dropped treasure loot, right? And that happened on both ends. And then there was a race from both ends of the map, is you had one hero with enough money to win and you had the wizard with enough money to win. And suddenly there was a race from both ends and they came within two spaces of each other. So
nice.
The game came down extremely close with both a low level and a high level character. For what it's worth, it's the low level hero that won that race, as it turns out. And it was a real tense nail biter. As an aside, I'll say that I was doing pretty poorly with my superhero. I had an opportunity to go pick up that dropped loot. I was trying to fight my way through a chamber. I ran into a green slime and I lost it. And then you have to roll two dice to see what the effect is. And I freaking died. It's not supposed to happen again. I actually was eliminated from the game and died. And I turned into green slime and everybody at the whole table went, We didn't realize that was a possibility. That was really, people didn't know what green slime was. And I had to explain the horrible fate of my superhero. And I was the only person that was actually booted from the game. How do you like that?
I don't recall that being in the game. So is that specific to the green slime monster that you're not allowed to come back as a new character?
No. It's just me. If you pull up, the purple image I prepared, I actually have the loss, fight loss results table from two separate editions. There you go. So the original game is at top. They call it the combat losing table. And when you don't beat a monster, you roll 2d6. And you see the very last result there. If you roll a 2, you are killed. Yep. Drop all prizes, remove the piece. Right. And if you have an optional rule, maybe you can pick another character and come in, but we weren't using any optional rules. So I was just finished.
Interesting. Interesting.
And you can see, and below that,
I have that table also in my print, but my print says at Heroes Lands, drop all treasure, go back to main staircase. You may choose to play the same hero or a different.
Right. So I think that's what I have. I think that's what I have at the bottom of this image. They reordered the chart to be monotonically decreasing result. So yeah, result two, their adventure kill, drop all treasures, go back to start, pick any pawn, start again. So basically they changed the optional rule of maybe you can restart to a core rule. And that table's just slightly more gentle, not too much, but slightly more gentle like that.
I will say that this became my core strategy when playing this game. My strategy is always to begin play as the wizard, go to the deepest level possible, get 10,000 worth of money, come back to the first level and try to intentionally get myself killed so that I can come back as the hero and scoop up that treasure and win.
Foul. I don't think that's sporting at all. I've never heard it. That's actually it. Goodbye. I don't want to hear this shit.
Dan's not here. Dan is done with. The funny thing is, Dan, that I would say it actually makes the game harder and it is a very difficult strategy to pull off.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of my way to entertain myself, especially when playing with a bunch of people who've never played before. I'm like, all right, I'm going to try and pull off this stupid, ridiculous shoot the moon strategy.
Okay. I see. Okay. This is commendable. And I wasn't really playing to my absolute best ability. I was also doing some kind of strategy that nobody else was going to think of, and getting myself stuck in, because there's this one corridor that starts at the third level and goes all the way. There's no exit from it except from the other end of the map. And you have to truck from one end of the map all the way to the other to get to the exit in the fifth level. And so I was kind of doing this kind of move, knowing that nobody else was going to be in the same area. That's commendable.
Of plant, get yourself killed with a treasure that somebody that a different character type can win with. The funny thing about it is, one, it's hard. Like, you have to encounter exactly the right kind of monster. More often than not, I'd be in there and I'd go, okay, right, I'm the wizard swinging my sword, and I killed him. Damn it. Okay, I got another 250 gold. That doesn't help me at all. Also it creates this lovely gap where, like, okay, I dropped the treasure. Hope no one else gets in there and gets it before I finish to run back.
Yeah, well, that occurs to me. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And for viewers, right, the wizard is a pretty robust melee fighter. According to chainmail, you're looking at a high level wizard and they are trying to simulate Gandalf in a, war type situation. So the wizard is real, really robust, really beefy here. And now I will say, Paul, that if you're slumming it on the first level as a wizard, one of the interesting things that they did in the Gen Con 11 tournament with the surprise, some monsters and prizes that you didn't know was there, was, of course, what they did, and none of this exists in the original game or any of the published games, is that among, one of the new characters is a cleric, so you've got like a magic hammer or something like that shows up, is that on each level, they add a cursed prize, a cursed magic item, right? So an item that's bad, that reduces your hit chances, the armor that makes you more vulnerable. And to my amazement, one of the prizes on the first level is an anti-magic scroll that wipes out all your spells. So if you're a wizard and you come in the first level like, oh, I'm going to slum it, I'm going to beat up some goblins, and you get that thing and you immediately wipe out all your spells on the first move, you're boned.
That sucked.
I'm like, wow, you guys were harsh. Harsh.
That's funny.
Right? one of the things that allowed us to reflect on is, and one of the things that I could share, and my players actually were really interested in seeing to begin with, was this idea that initially people were playing with this 2d6 combat system. And, as we all know, if you do pick up original D&D, the 1974, the core rules say, go look at that 2d6 table in chainmail, use that. Or optionally, you could use this alternative combat system that uses a D20 roll instead, and here's some different tables for that. Some people, some early people claim that's what they were always doing as soon as stuff was published, but technically the D20 is the alternative combat system. And, you know, not a lot of people know about that. One of the things we could reflect on is how much more valuable a plus one sword is. So there's a bunch of swords in dungeon that give you plus one on your attack roll. And that makes an enormous difference. There were so many times that a combat on Friday, that plus one made the difference. They were one pip off. They would have lost. Now they're winning. And it happened over and over again because of that. Whereas when you go to D20, the effect of it is halved. You know, with 2D6, you've got about a 10 pip range versus a 20 pip range. Arguably, all your plus one swords really should have been plus two swords at the outset.
Yeah, should have at least been plus two, right?
Yeah, yeah. So instead of this kind of marginal value, it's really big.
Well, I wonder what comes in the 2014 version of the game. Is it still 2D6 based?
I bet it is. I think it is. I don't have access to those rules. From what I read in the Wikipedia article, which is a great article, covers a lot of stuff really well. So I recommend that our viewers go look at the Wikipedia article for the Dungeon board game. It is using basically the same core rules, from my understanding.
Interesting. I mean, I get. I always kind of assumed that part of the reason they continue to print and sell this game is that it is a kind of like nice bridge from your used to your more traditional board games. You've played Monopoly and Clue and such. D&D is a giant leap from there. Here's a midway point to, like, you know, kind of looks and feels and plays like a board game, but, you know, gets you some of that D&D stuff to it. Maybe I'm wrong.
I agree. And, you know, kind of running again on Friday, it's made me reassess what a pretty good introduction it is to traditional D&D. And among the things, like, if you're thinking, you know, for what it's worth, just yesterday I was doing something on the street, and I actually had multiple people walk up to me and say, "Hey, can you tell me how to, you do this role playing thing? Can you tell me how to get in this D&D thing?" And so it's kind of an interesting weekend for that for me, frankly. And I actually think it wouldn't be terrible. It wouldn't be terrible if you're not sure, if you're not certain about whether you want to get into traditional D&D or not, for one evening, play a game of Dungeon. And among the things that it gets you to think about is there's a variety of character classes you're going to pick from. They have different advantages, disadvantages. And at least, you know, for traditional D&D, you get to visualize this really elaborate dungeon. The dungeon is quite extensive, frankly. You can't remotely get to see all the content in one or even multiple sessions. It's quite elaborate. You get a pretty good sense of the ecology of, like, what kind of monsters you're going to probably run into and what kind of traps. And you get a taste for, like, the magic items changing your abilities and things like that. And I do think that right off the bat, there's an interesting advantage to people, and we've kind of learned this lesson a couple times, to being able to visualize the dungeon space as opposed to someone's very first D&D session of, you open a door and there's a corridor east and there's a corridor west, which way do you go? And they're not sure what the likely gameplay results of that is going to be. So it might really be interesting to, like, play one game of Dungeon and just get the kind of sense of what's going to happen in a standard dungeon isn't bad.
I have a counter to that, Dan, which is the thing where I think Dungeon really falls down and does not give you a D&D experience is that it is competitive, right? There is no cooperative planning element. There is no, right, like, you're not. One of the things I think is so interesting about the character selection in D&D is that it is a process of trying to form a cohesive team, right? As you and I have seen in many of the D&D games we've played where we decided, like, oh, let's play all wizards, or let's play all elves, or let's play, right? Like, usually that actually leaves you, I would say, it's less good than having a nice diverse party. And so you kind of lose all that in Dungeon. I guess I'd be curious to hear you compare, say, again, if your goal here is, I want to introduce someone who's used to board games and has never played D&D, and I want to introduce them to some basic concepts. Compare, say, sitting down to play a game of Dungeon versus, say, playing a game of HeroQuest. Do you think HeroQuest could be a little more in the right direction?
You might be right. And I think one of our great viewers was mentioning Talisman, right? Talisman is kind of in the same ballpark, I think, a little bit.
Talisman, again, is competitive, yeah. Though. Talisman is, again...
Okay.
Yes, you have different character types, but you're trying, like, I must get the Ring of Power so that I can rule the world and beat everyone else.
Okay. Like, and I see Disparals also talking about HeroQuest, so that's probably the better option.
HeroQuest, or the later Warhammer Quest is my personal favorite because it eliminates the need for a DM player. But, you know, you and I sat down and played HeroQuest not that long ago, if you remember. Yeah. It has a weird sort of, like, it has a board, but you can't visualize the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
Because it's kind of being laid out as you explore it. How does that,
right.
How does that strike you in comparison to straight D&D, where, like, you just have to visualize it in your mind's eye, versus Dungeon, where it's like, nope, here's the board.
Obviously a strong option, right? So strong argument. This is not a slam dunk. We didn't have huge problems with that Friday night. And I don't mind the fact that, you're not playing as a team. And the funny thing is, like, someone even had to ask the question, because I was failing to even have to say that this is a competitive race instead of a team, is that with Dungeon, you do get, players get to survey the different levels. So you get to see what kind of stuff's happening on the first level, what kind of stuff is happening for a high-level wizard with really dangerous stuff on the sixth level, and you're not locked into the party only exploring a couple rooms of one single level, and you get kind of this buffet of, like, oh, this will happen here, and I can look forward to this later when I'm higher level, and I don't hate that. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw dragons, right? If you're starting out in D&D, you're clearly not going to run into the titular monster of a dragon on your first, second, or third level. You're going to have to wait. And so at least playing Dungeon, you are convinced there actually are dragons in the game.
I mean, you make a good point, though, right? Like, that, like, the thing that Dungeon has that's maybe missing from a game like HeroQuest, if you're playing HeroQuest or Warhammer Quest, it's a little more linear, right? You know that there is, you're trying to get from the beginning of the dungeon to the end. There's going to be a big boss fight in the end that you want to get to beat, to win, you know, get the whatever the objective is of that particular dungeon. Whereas Dungeon is just a little more sandboxy, right? Of just, like, they're just things. I don't know. Where's the good stuff? Who knows? You have to explore to find it, right? And maybe that sort of exploration focus is perhaps missing in a game like HeroQuest or Warhammer Quest. Right? There are certainly twists and turns, but there's definitely, like, a beginning and an end. And they're trying to be more story-based, right? They're trying to be like, no, you're here to stop the evil demon lord, or you're here to go find the fabulous MacGuffin. So you have a goal, right? To go find the thing. Yeah.
Good point. Interesting. Yeah. One of the things about Dungeon, you know, so the map that McGarry made is really clever. It's a really clever piece of design work. And even though your elements, your geographic elements are just corridors and rooms and chambers and some secret doors. That's it. That's all you got. Oh, thanks for pulling that up. It's really interesting that there's different little sub puzzles of just how you navigate around different places. And for players that don't know here, the first level is the centerpiece, right? That kind of brownish golden piece. That's where you start. That's the first level. And it's pretty easy to get around. There isn't too much intricate stuff there. The top of the map, as we're looking at, is the second level. And then on either side, the third level. And then as you come down the sides, there's the fourth level, as, like, basically the spaces get darker, the fifth level, and the bottom center, that's the sixth level. And the fourth, fifth, and sixth levels are a lot more intricate. They're a lot more labyrinthian, and you can get stuck in one room next to another. You can get stuck. They've got it set so you've got two chambers, the big rooms, really next to each other, and there's the risk that you could possibly lose against one monster and get sent to the other one, and you actually get ping-pong back around between two of the chambers and get trapped in a way that can't happen on the first through fourth levels. So even just the way that you move around and have to navigate is different on the more intricate lower, as we look at it, fifth and sixth levels. And one of the things that I've done in the past, and I offered this Friday night, is we play one game and the players go to certain places that we think we can get to more easily. And we sweep out a number of rooms and maybe the left-hand side gets mostly cleared out. And then two-thirds of the map still has rooms with more monsters and prizes. And I can say, we can just play a whole separate game with what's left over and have the dungeon be partially cleared out by the prior party. And now you have to explore these areas that we were avoiding before. And so that kind of sandbox play that you're talking about, Paul, really works well in a number of different senses, the way that that McGarry designed that map.
You know, the fascinating thing here is I'm looking at the board. As you were talking there, I was looking at the board from my print from 89. And while they did kind of clean it up a little, make it a little less wonky, which I'm not even sure is a good, necessarily good thing. I like how kind of like your map looks.
Yeah.
It's a little more square, a little more rectangly. But the design is basically the same.
It's I think that topologically, they've maintained the same map in every edition.
Yeah.
I think every edition, they've never changed the topology that McGarry laid out. Yeah.
And, you know, I never analyzed it the way you just did of like, the level one is right there in the middle, and then there's a clear path to, and then it forks and kind of loops around back down on itself to get to six.
One of the neat things is that, you know, if you're a hero or elf, you probably want to be on the top end of the map, level 2, 3, something like that. And if you're a superhero wizard, you want to be on the bottom 5th, 6th level. That I enjoy so much is that if you're a wizard, you start in the center there, and you do have the option, if you come down 3 spaces, there's a secret door that immediately lets on to a stairway all the way down to 6. So most people are going to ignore that and pretend that that's not there. But for what it's worth, it was Max playing the Wizard Friday. It's like, that's where I'm going. I'm going to the secret door. I'm finding my way through it. And I'm immediately going down to the horrors of the 6th level. And for some reason that the me imagining that in my head is really exciting, that there's this secret door right by the entrance that immediately takes you to the worst part of the dungeon. That's kind of clever.
Yep. And it also makes the magic item, like the chime of opening, if you find it, that much more exciting. Like, I have more freedom of movement. I can easily pop down to 6 now, not to get stuck there rolling the die over and over again at the secret door.
Yep. And I picked that up. Sometimes they slightly change the thematic. So in my edition of the game, that item is it's the secret entrance card, which is supposed to be a wand of secret door detection.
Okay. Interesting.
And I picked it up and I'm like, great, I can go into this part of the 4th level. I go through a secret door. I run into a monster. I immediately lose it. Now I'm stuck. I can't get through the next secret door that I was planning on. And now I'm boned. I had a really bad night.
what was the major takeaway from the players at the end of the night of having played this with folks who had never seen it before?
The main question is, can I get this? Where can I get it?
Yeah. Nice.
They really liked it. They were immediately thinking about what kind of expansions could we design? Could we create new pieces of our own? And is it available for purchase right now? Was the main question that we left with. So it was a hit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
I think the fact that it came down to, you know, Max with the wizard, right? You start with 7 spells. Lauren was saying, I thought you were just going to deplete all your spells really fast. He had 1 spell left at the end. So he was being smart about conserving it. He found the crystal ball that allowed you to detect what monster you're interacting with before you fight it. So he could do that, spend a turn, use the right spell, or go on for melee possibly. And the number of spells that he had was almost exactly what he needed to get through the game. And like I say, it came down to a race of the hero managed to get back to start, and Max with his wizard was just 1 space off the start space. So it had this really exciting race, and everybody agreed it's really well balanced. The timing to your gold threshold to win seemed really well balanced, seemed to really fit in. I think about the hour that we were playing worked really well. And it was, they were for a 1975 game, they were actually really surprised by how robust it was.
That's great. Yeah. I think all that makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure, like, even though it's probably not really in print anymore. I'm sure you can get copies. I'm sure that they can be found.
I think so. I think I was looking at eBay, and I think there's some, you know, possibly beat up copies like I have. There might be some cards missing. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm missing some cards myself. You know, maybe that's an opportunity to make your own.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Certainly, that's, you know, that's what McGarry did, right?
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Not too hard. All right, Dan, we are out of time. Any final thoughts on Dungeon?
I'm really glad that my players prompted me to pick it up and set it up for them. It's actually not something that I would have thought there'd be so much excitement about, but there was. And I actually, you know, coming away Friday night, I do think it's actually a great introduction to traditional D&D. I think it gets you at a glance, gets you to visualize the layout of what a dungeon might be, get a really good taste of a whole bunch of the classic monsters that are going to be in a dungeon. You know, at some point someone turned over a trap for the first time and they were like, oh no, there are traps. That's what they just learned right there. Right. Magic items that you're going to want to add to your character and the overall gameplay of a standard dungeon. So it stands up really well as both a game unto itself and also a taste of fantasy dungeon based gaming. It was a real hit.
I think it is. It is a solid board game, honestly. And that's what stands out to me is, even if you're not talking about like introducing people to concepts of D&D or trying to get a taste of D&D, if you're just talking about like, hey, I've got four or five people and we want to sit around and play a board game, it's a good choice. It's a solid game.
Yeah. I'm going to pull up a piece of chat here. So okay. Stephen Kennedy in the chat is telling us that WotC just re-released it. I did not know that. That's news to me. If that's I can't right this second, I can't confirm that, but if that's correct, that is fascinating because we that was not on our radar. I did not know that. I thought the last time was 12 years ago. Just re-released it. Okay.
No. Got legs. Well, this game. Got legs.
All right. Well, Wizards did something right. Look at that. Wizards did something right.
Viewers, if you have thoughts on the Dungeon board game, any edition, across the various printings, or have some news for us about the latest printing, or any thoughts at all, please leave us a comment here in the YouTube video. We would love to hear from you, and maybe your comments will spawn a new conversation for us in a future.
Yeah, and of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, GitHub. We have the handle Wandering DMs everywhere, so please look for us there and bore into that like button.
If you prefer to listen to this show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Or you can find us on various podcast carriers such as iTunes, Spotify, and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show on one of those sites right now and it has the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And we just have the best patrons. Every tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation can use 24/7 about all the games that we love. And like Paul said at the top of the hour, in about 10 minutes, we'll be there for our live video after chat to get more of your reflections on Dungeon or Hero Quest or Talisman or Space Hulk or other board games that are kind of introductory stuff like that. So the stuff that is on your mind, we want to hear more about that in a couple minutes. And I would be remiss, Paul, if I don't remind people that, you know, our interaction with Dave McGarry happened at GaryCon a couple years ago. We, for the first time since then, you and I are going to GaryCon this year, 2026. Mm-hmm. And we have a fairly busy lineup of things that we are engaged with or running. And one of them is we are doing, so that's the weekend of March 20th. And many of us, I think, are lining up our travel arrangements and things like that. And so we are doing one of our dungeon design dashes as a seminar Thursday night. You and I are running separate play tests on the following days, as well as some other games we're running. I'm also one of the referees on the team for the Legends of Role-Playing Tournament on Friday, I think it is. So if any of our viewers are going to be there at GaryCon, we would love to meet with you there. I'd love to have you in our game sessions or maybe playing next to you. Or just hanging out at some point, or just say hi if you get the opportunity. We'd love that. I was looking, I mean, I was actually, you know, you and I were talking about looking for some of these founding people that have in the past run game sessions at GaryCon. Maybe there's not so much of that. Some of those folks are maybe not as strong to go to every convention they used to. So I was looking for, I kind of wanted to play Dungeon with McGarry again. And I don't see his name on the schedule. Someone else is running Dungeon. I see that as a gentleman named Doug Turbosch. I do not see Dave himself running it this cycle. But I don't know. Maybe I'll get into that session of Dungeon because I really do enjoy it.
You know, maybe we'll just have to bring or obtain a copy and sit down and play it together. See who wants to pop in.
Well, maybe that's the best possible thing. That's a great idea. Wow, I should co-host a show with you, Paul. You're really genius with games. We should do a podcast or something.
That's a great idea. Viewers, if you are not able to make it to Wisconsin in March, do watch the channel. We will be hopefully live streaming that session, and we'll be watching the chat as well for any interaction there during the Dungeon Podcast. So please. Keep an eye out for that posting coming soon.
There's a small chance that the people in the room are going to be going, what's going on? What's happening right now? And we're going to need your experienced dungeon design input to help get us over the hump and create that thing that we're going to be running later in the weekend. So we will want you to tune into that. So a whole bunch of stuff, exciting stuff that's happening for us this spring, and hopefully you guys can be part of it either in person or online. And don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, so we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you.